hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. Now, if you're out listening across America and you'd like to call, but I'm going to ask you to hold your calls until we ask for them, but our number is 1-888. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here on the Central Coast of California, it's 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us from the ARC Institute, Jerry Guidetti. And Jerry Guidetti was a scientist who worked in genetic engineering. And, well, Jerry, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm doing fine, Stan. How about yourself?
No, just doing fine. There's certainly all sorts of interesting things going out there, and dealing with all sorts of things. So,
and now. the world is a crazy place right now, and we certainly have been busy here at the ARC Institute tracking any number of stories that all relate back to the global food supply. And I guess the biggest breaking story, well, in two areas. But I'd like to start tonight by telling you that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has just put out its prospects for grain harvest, not only here in the United States, but all around the world. And unfortunately, you know, our consumption around the world of grains has been going up. And unfortunately, our production as a global community has been going down. We had probably a peak year in 1997. We had well over 400 million metric tons of world grain stocks in 1998 and 1999. But I have to tell you that this year and next year, the 06-07 year, we are going to have the lowest supplies of grain carryover stocks, that is, what's left over at the end of the year, to carry us over until the next harvest. The following year, we only have 57 days worth of food left on this planet for 2006 and 07, 57 days worth.
Now, is that going to be corn? Is that going to be wheat?
This is all grain. This is all grain, and I'll give you a little detail here. We have all coarse grains, which is corn and oats, all of the coarse grains, and wheat are classified separately, and they are expected to be much tighter in 06-07. Of course, global grain prices are going to go very high. They may even, in fact, double. The corn is due largely to the supply and demand changes in the United States, the problems there. Why? Because now we're looking at strong domestic demand for ethanol to run cars as an oil substitute to become a bit more gasoline or oil independent. And so that's going to shrink ending stocks here in the United States like crazy. As a matter of fact, we're going to have a deficit of something like 61 million metric tons for that alone. We're going to have to produce for ethanol in 2007, 57 million metric tons just for automobiles and exports.
Well, you can almost see this thing coming down the line as the price of oil went up. Yeah. Why, of course, it became financially feasible to go ahead and begin making ethanol. And apparently there are all sorts of new plants going in all throughout the Middle West, which is going to use up a lot of the corn that we would have used for lots of other purposes. Right.
Right.
We're going to be back here in just a moment with Jerry Guidetti as we begin analyzing the possibility, the very real possibility that there could be some real shortages of food, which we've not seen probably during our lifetime. Well, Jerry, pick up the story there. I think that I share your concern about this. And we used to have massive stores of wheat on hand, you know. In fact, we were almost giving it away throughout the world for a time.
Mm-hmm. And we were always classified as the world's breadbasket. Matter of fact, if you go to our website, to the ARC Institute's website, you'll find an article that I wrote, I believe it was back in 1996, called Whatever Happened to Wheat Mountain. And it was the first time I began speaking out internationally about the declining stocks, carryover stocks around the world. We used to have mountains of wheat here in the United States, and the federal government used to pay people to put up huge barns and metal buildings and silos and so on to store that wheat so that we'd have plenty here in the United States. But now, unfortunately, in a global trading market and market where we have a bad balance with trade with other countries, we're trying to export as much as we can. But as it turns out, we are now having to import a large portion of our grains. We are selling, but we're also importing. And so the balance, and certainly on this program, in an hour, I can't read off columns and columns of numbers, but I can tell you that, unfortunately, the United States is not the breadbasket of the world anymore. We import grains from many countries. For example, our wheat supply shortfall that we're expecting in 2006 and 2007 is going to be offset by stocks and good crops, we hope, coming out of Argentina, Australia, Canada, and the EU, the European Union. Believe it or not, we are going to have to import wheat from all of those places.
And well, Mary, what happened to our production? Because we used to have massive overproduction.
Yes.
And certainly we've heard many of the farmers are getting so disillusioned, you know, with what's happening as far as, you know, the cost of their seed and fertilizers, but specifically the cost of diesel now has really made it so much more expensive for them to be planting their crops. Is this going to play a part into it, or are the farmers planting as much as ever?
Well, the farmers are not planting as much as ever. It is becoming less profitable for them to do so, but also we have a lot of marginal lands here in the United States. Pumping water for irrigation is a large problem. Providing for the fuel, which you've just touched on, for running all of their planting equipment and so on. Plus, we have tremendous weather problems. People don't like to hear me say it on the air about global warming. You stand on one side of that issue or not. It doesn't matter, Stan, whether it is caused by a natural cyclical phenomenon where the Earth is getting warmer every, say, 200 years, 300 years, and cycling back out again, or whether it's man creating this greenhouse effect.
Hold that thought right there.
Sure.
We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry is saying that certainly weather is playing a part in some of the problems that we're having as far as the wheat production is concerned. We know that they had a terrible time down there in Texas this last year. Maybe that, you know, it was just so terribly, terribly hot there, and they weren't getting any rain, and certainly between the heat and that lack of rain, why, I'm sure that did play a tremendous part in cutting back their production, didn't it?
Right. It certainly did. Weather is a major cause here. We have water shortages, or we have floods in many areas of the world. And here in the United States, we've had a lot of bad wheat crops and wheat cropping years. And unfortunately, it's looking like our plantings are going to be down. In fact, they are down this year. They'll probably be down next year. We also have an awful lot of encroachment on rural and agricultural lands, because farmers can't afford to pay their high expenses, when in fact they can sell their land for rural developments and make a massive amount of money. It gets very, very difficult for our farmers to try to make a living off the land the way they used to. Also, seed costs a lot, and that brings us back to the whole GMO question and the cost of commercial seed and so on. It's not as rampant in wheat as it is in corn, for example, and soybeans, but certainly it is beginning to impact wheat farmers as well. So all in all, we are going to be short of wheat. We are going to be dramatically short of corn, and that one is going to be very interesting to watch unfold, because we are touting corn as the replacement for gasoline, in that we're going to try to produce so much ethanol. Well, then that means all that would have gone to feed cattle and to feed humans, and of course chickens as well, eat corn. Most of our corn, for example, does go to animal feed more than it does go to human feed, and it also goes to all of the other industrial uses for corn. You know, we do corn starch, corn sweetener, and so on. But at any rate, all of that corn that was going to be used for consumption is now also vying for, or is being competed with for ethanol. Now, if that means with the corn shortage that we're going to see a doubling of prices of that corn, and ethanol therefore is going to go up in price, are we in the end going to have any cheaper fuel product than we would with gasoline? Oil-based gasoline.
Well,
my short answer to that would be no. It's not going to be any cheaper, but maybe it'll be available. Go ahead, Stan. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, and Chris, one of the things that really bothers me is corn is that so much of this is genetically engineered,
right.
And we don't know which of the genetically engineered corns. And there are a number of things that they do to these, and there's some very serious questions about the safety. And as we know, the certainly government is not doing anything to protect us from the poisoning of our water with fluoride. They're not doing anything to protect us from the poisoning of our children with aspartame, MSG, and certainly they're certainly knowingly poisoning our children with the influenza shots, which contain mercury, and of course they give those shots to the mother, and it concentrates the mercury in the brain of the developing child in the utero. They know all of these things, and so, you know, can we really trust them when they tell us that, you know, the genetically engineered corn is essentially the same as normal corn? And I don't think so. In fact, we've gone over this in the past, but there are a number of studies that show that there are some very real problems. We know that certainly that in pigs, some of this genetically engineered corn produced sterility in the pigs.
Right. And of course, that is corn for food use, and the GMO corn is a major problem. As a matter of fact, they'll probably be using much more GMO corn for ethanol production. Because you're going to want as much biomass as possible, as much volume as possible in order to produce ethanol. A bigger question in my mind that I have heard no politicians deal with in touting corn for ethanol production and how we have unlimited quantities of land to grow this on, where are we going to get all the water to grow this massive amount of corn? Where are we going to get all of the oil and natural gas-based fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, and so on? They are oil-based products or gas-based products, depending on what product we're looking at. And unfortunately, that puts us in an even greater position of dependence, or still dependent upon, imported oil in order to get those products and refineries and so on to get those products made. What happens when we have interruptions in those kinds of services, which we have been talking about, you and I, from the ARC Institute's work in following the avian influenza pandemic? What's going to happen when we have an interruption, even by terrorism or by avian influenza shutdown of international ports? If we cannot get in all of the fertilizers, all of the pesticides, herbicides, and so on, or the oil into the companies that make all of these things, how are we going to grow all of this corn to make all of this ethanol? How are we going to keep those plants up, and so on? So it's not, you know, I wrote another article you see on the ARC Institute's website called Oil to Fork, showing the connection between oil in the field to the food on your plate. And it's a critical connection to understand. So when we're looking at the numbers that I'm looking at right now from this most recent data on global stocks, it appears that we are now on the slippery slope down in terms of production. And this is global. We're down to 57 days of food globally. What happens, Stan, if Merapi, the volcano in Indonesia, which is now erupting, it was once a super volcano, that area of the world, or Yellowstone volcano, or bird flu, anything to interrupt agriculture just for one season, and we're talking an agriculture dependent nearly 100% on genetically engineered seeds or seeds produced by big agrochemical companies.
Well, one of the things that really bothers me, Jerry, is that I was reading about over in Europe, where, of course, they have not had ordinarily genetically engineered crops.
Right.
And recently, why, of course, some of the people who've been doing the organic farming, organic growing of corn, have found out that for some reason or other, their corn crops, and I'm sure it's because of the pollination, are now contaminated with genetically engineered material. In other words, somehow these genetically engineered things have spread by pollination into the fields. Certainly, what we're talking about here is massive growing of corn, and of course we're saying, well, gee, we could do that efficiently, you know, as long as we're going to use it for making alcohol, it's not going to matter if it would be toxic to the individual. But is there any way in the world that we can possibly, you know, have these genetically engineered crops without having them contaminate the other crops? In other words, the ones we're going to be eating?
Well, here's the rub. This is what's being touted by the genetic giants, the gene giants. They're saying, okay, well, let's put the Terminator in them. Let's put the Terminator gene sequences into these corns, into wheat, into so on. And in that way, the seeds that are produced in those crops are not going to be fertile. And the seed is not going to be able to spread. Okay, there's an argument. This is the so-called green argument that they've suddenly come up with because they've got so much contamination around the globe already from so many of their products. So they said, all right, let's use the Terminator. But what they don't tell you is the Terminator sequences would be both in the ovum or the female part of the corn, the kernels, and in the pollen, which fertilizes those kernels or ova. And so the pollen, the ones that aren't fertilizing, are blowing in the wind because it is a wind-pollinated crop. And in doing so, it's spreading out to other corn in other fields and so on, and you've got Terminators everywhere. Then take that and multiply it over all of the other crops that they're looking at putting Terminator into, and you soon see that you've got cross-outovers going on, you've got genetic drift going on, and genetic shifts going on, as a result of contamination with the pollen from these GMO plants. And that can go into native species on the land. It can go into related things, wild eggplant, for example, wild wheats, wild oats, all of those things. The Terminator technology was created as a generic technology. And they do put some specific kinds of molecules and genes, genes coding for specific molecules in all of these different systems, and there are many Terminators now. So my fear is that before we do have a catastrophe, we're going to have the suggestion that we put Terminator out there. Don't forget, Stan, you and I have also talked about, they're also looking at crops producing pharmaceutical products for us. All right, from vaccines to things for diabetes to things for cancer and so on. A marvelous idea if you could control it. A great idea if they were enclosed and this was in a completely isolated environment, but unfortunately, nature is meant to reproduce itself. Plants, seeding plants are meant to reproduce themselves. Pollen is microscopic. It gets out. I don't care how good your system is. You can have a level 4 lab. Eventually, you end up with something getting out. So this stuff is going out into the environment, and it takes the genes we've implanted in it with it. And that is the danger, unfortunately, to all of these. We cannot control something that we have let out of the bottle like this. It's not that easy to control.
And, of course, if these Terminator begin to get into the other crops, then, of course, they're not going to germinate, and you're not going to have any new seeds. And,
exactly.
And of course, you know, mankind has existed for 6,000 years by planting, saving seeds and planting seeds. And then what happens, of course, when man comes along and is going to genetically engineer this so that the seeds won't reproduce.
Right.
And we're looking into some very real problems. I share Jerry's concern. I think if you have not laid in a supply of food, remember, you know, if things go bad, you're not going to be able to depend on FEMA. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest, of course, is Jerry Guidetti. But before we go on, Jerry, there is somebody that called in and asked about canola oil. Now, there, of course, is a lawsuit that's been filed against Colonel Sanders, a chicken, because they're using hydrogenated fats, and oh, it would be so much better, so much safer if you use canola oil. And, of course, I'm very concerned about the canola oil, not only because it's genetically engineered, but, well, what are your thoughts about canola oil?
I actually use canola oil as an alternative to olive oil in all of my baking-type cooking because it is a largely monounsaturated fat. It is much, much more heart-healthy, helps balance lipid profile and so on in the blood. I am not concerned with it.
Why do you use this rather than the olive oil?
Oh, olive oil is because I use extra virgin olive oil, and if I am to make a very light flavored cake or something like that, it would be the only time that I would use canola oil,
okay,
just for the lighter flavor. However, I use almost exclusively extra virgin olive oil.
And for our listeners out there,
yes,
start thinking about doing this. It's so much more healthy for
you. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Hands down, extra virgin olive oil. I use it on everything, including the little bread that I eat, but I do use it on bread as well. And there are so many benefits to using extra virgin olive oil that I could go on and on and do a program about that.
Well, maybe sometime we surely should.
Yeah, there you go.
I didn't mean to take you off the subject.
That's all right.
I did ask that.
I'm not
that
concerned about canola oil from the standpoint of contamination with genetically modified products. Because this is an extract, this is a lipid portion of the seed. It does not contain DNA, it does not contain any of the other parts of the seed. I'm not at all concerned about getting any extraneous genetic material in any way. So the canola, but I use fats extremely judiciously, and canola would only be used when I'm using, because the profile isn't as good as olive oil is, and yet it is a good profile compared to anything else. Trans fats are definitely deadly. There is no doubt about it. There is a link to breast cancer. There's a link to so many ailments that we have. So I stay clear away from trans fats. But at any rate, where were we?
Well, we were basically talking about the very real possibility that there's going to be food shortages,
yes,
and
there are,
and especially as far as the corn is concerned.
Yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, corn and wheat, and we have now a 10-year low in wheat. We haven't seen these supplies this low. In terms of total grain, we have not seen such low stocks here in the United States since 1972, at a time when our population has exploded relative to 72. Now, let me layer on top of that the fact that we have had an exceedingly difficult past several days globally with the bird flu picture, and we just got word tonight that H5 has been found in Canada in Prince Edward's Island, the western side of Prince Edward's Island, in a backyard flock, a large backyard flock of mixed poultry. We had four goslings, four young geese, out of a total of 11, die. The farmer saw them a few days before, walking kind of strangely. This is a large clue, because H5N1 often showed in some of the less pathogenic strains.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Jerry Guidetti. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry was just saying that they've actually found some evidence of the H5N1 virus in flocks. Is that in Vancouver Island or
okay,
British Columbia?
No, that's Prince Edward Island.
Okay.
And that's over on the east side of the country, as you know, all the way on the far east by Newfoundland. And it was not confirmed yet that it is high-path H5N1. What we have right now is the H5, is all they're telling us. The other thing we know is we've got four dead geese. Don't forget H5N1 in China began as a low-path strain, and then all of a sudden the bar-headed geese began to die. Now, the bad news is that we found dead geese in Canada. The other bad news is we have H5 already identified. Well, we've already identified other H5N1s in Canada this year. dotted across the country kind of haphazardly, but it was low pathogenic. Now, the fact that we've got four geese dead and the chickens are still alive, well, they were still alive, we've now slaughtered them all. The fact that the chickens had not died and none of the other poultry on this farm had died, that's possibly good news in that if it was the highly pathogenic H5N1, the others, especially the chickens, would likely have been infected and would have died as well because they're particularly sensitive to the high-calf H5N1. However, the fact that we have any dead goslings at all at a time when we're expecting the arrival via wild migratory birds of the pathogenic, the highly pathogenic H5N1 that's fatal to humans, can be, is very much cause for concern. So we'll have our ears to the ground here at the ARC Institute all weekend, and we'll be trying to find out from Winnipeg, where the Microbiology Institute is there in Winnipeg, we'll be trying to find out whether or not this is going to be confirmed as H5N1. It's now only a matter of time before it arrives here in the United States. It is now all over the entire Eastern Hemisphere. And the situation in humans has taken a dramatic turn for the worst in China, and for Beijing to come out 2 days ago stating that they are gravely concerned because they have a 31-year-old truck driver who has had exposure to no sick chickens, even though he was in live marketplaces where there were all healthy chickens, and every place he went was all healthy birds. China put out the word right from Beijing saying that they are very concerned that the virus has mutated to become much more virulent to humans, and that at work here might be the fact that the chickens themselves are now carrying high pathogenic H5N1, but are not getting sick themselves, probably because China has been abusing both poorly made vaccines and the human antiviral amantadine to try to keep from losing all their poultry. And so you have chickens looking healthy now, possibly infecting humans directly, so a human wouldn't even know that he was exposed to H5N1. And now they are tracing the man's many contacts as a truck driver. It was right on the border with Hong Kong. Hong Kong is in a tizzy. They are very concerned. They have actually put out word that they think there is a good chance that this has mutated into a much more dangerous form.
So what actually happened to this one man in China that apparently had come
out? He's in critical condition.
Okay.
He's in critical condition. And by the way, the eighth family member of the cluster I told you about in Indonesia last week, it looked like the one who ran away after taking care of his son and watching all his family members die in the hospital, he ran away from the hospital, went out, touched base with 54 other people. They've got all of those on Tamiflu. They've been treating this man with Tamiflu. He's now dying, and the sad part is he's been on all of these drugs and so on to try to cure him, and now his entire brain, they said he's got pus in his brain. We have seen in 10% of the cases of H5N1 in Asia, 10% of them are developing neurological symptoms. Not surprising when you consider we've now found it live in their blood. And so in the blood, then, it's just a matter of getting into other areas of the body to cause the massive organ failure.
All right, fine. Well, that's... Anyway, we'll be back here in just a moment. Our guest is Jay Guidetti of the ARC Institute, and we're talking about the latest information on the worldwide avian flu epidemic, which certainly has affected birds all throughout the world, and certainly there have been a number of at least 8 recent deaths in Indonesia, which is a very strange story, but apparently almost its entire family was wiped out. We'll be back in just a minute. Incidentally, amantadine, which Jerry was talking about, is another antiviral agent. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Jerry Guidetti. Jerry, as far as what we're seeing, you know, as far as the food supplies are concerned, is anybody in government expressing any concern about this? Because we had always tried to keep massive supplies on hand, you know, so that we would never get into a bind here in the United States. So, I mean, are they trying to, you know, lay in a supply so that we would not simply have a, you know, a 60 or 70 days supply, but would be back up to a year, 2 years of the basic grains?
No. As a matter of fact, we're not. As a matter of fact, we don't even have the storage facilities for them anymore at this point. All of those have been dismantled, and basically we do just-in-time everything. We're down to 57 days of grain around the world, all totaled, and for us to start to put in massive stockpiles, you would have to have a whole lot more available to stock, wouldn't you? Unfortunately, our consumption is going up and our production is going down. So right now, you're looking at a global shortage. And we have been asking people for years, and you know that because I've been talking to you about it. We have been asking people to be able to take care of themselves, to lay in a supply of wheat berries, wheat grain, to lay in a supply of oats and things like that, to store things like that, and also to store seeds that are not GMO, not hybrids, so that you can feed yourself, because we have always seen the day coming when any single interruption for one single season would cause massive starvation. I got involved personally in all of the content analysis of the H5N1 virus, largely because of its impact on global food supply, its potential impact on the survival of the human species. Now we're looking at China and Indonesia and Hong Kong putting out alerts, more Hong Kong and China, that we may be looking at many more human cases than they have even begun to talk about. They are admitting that there are many undiagnosed pneumonias all over the countryside. So why is that important to the food supply? Because when the pandemic strain evolves efficiently, it's only a matter of weeks. I can show you slide after slide of some of the presentations that I do, showing you how rapidly some of the avian influenzas in our last century went through the U.S. population. It's only a matter of weeks then before you end up having a pandemic that takes people out of work, takes down shipments, takes down farmers, takes down everybody to the point where you're dependent on yourself. Your country now does not have enough to supply you for more than that length of time.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Jerry Guidetti. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and before we go on, Jerry, so I don't forget, let's get your website out, get your telephone number out, and I want you to tell the people why they should get in touch with you and all about the heirloom seeds.
Sure. The phone number is 1-800-255-1912, 1-800-255-1912. And the website is ARK Institute.com, ARK Institute, all is one word, .com. What you'll find there is our collections of non-hybrid heirloom seeds, non-genetically modified, and all of the books and other materials that you need to learn how to take care of yourself, do self-reliance gardening, for example, and that Encyclopedia of Country Wisdom. That one has over 8,000 skills and recipes and everything you need to take care of yourself. Many, many books there. But in addition, we have made available absolutely free, you can link to Dr. Grattan Woodson's Pandemic Handbook to Take Care of Your Family at Home. He's from Emory. He teaches doctors at Emory University at the medical school. He has put this out because he knows that doctors aren't going to be available for their patients. Do hit that link. Download it. It's 34 pages long. It's absolutely free of charge. Print that out. We'd like you to go there. We'd like you to learn something about taking care of your own water supply. That also is on our website, arkinstitute.com. And also, Stan, I'm going to do this. I know my computer's going to get slammed, but I'm going to do this. I'm going to give you out my personal, from my desk, my email address. And if you will put in the subject line, alert, please, or just alert will do. I will put you in a mailbox, and as the new information unfolds on both the global food supply and the pandemic situation, which is increasing now in concern and severity, I will go ahead and send you out the latest alerts only when necessary. And that email address is arkinstitute@charter.net. arkinstitute@charter.net. And put just alert in the subject, and I'd be happy to try to keep you in touch with this between radio appearances with Dr. Stan, keep you in tune with what's going on. We're getting developments now, actually, every day. More deaths in Indonesia, by the way, Stan. More children, more clusters, and four nurses that were infected and so on. So, no, this is happening, unfortunately, and we're hoping and praying, of course, that this thing's going to reverse and go back into birds where it belongs, but it's certainly not looking like it right now.
All right, fine. And, of course, Jerry does have a wonderful set of these heirloom seeds. And, Jerry, will those seeds last longer? Could you just put them in a refrigerator, or should you just put them in a cool place? I know you have directions on how to freeze them, but what about just maintaining them for a few years?
Sure. 3 to 5 years at cool room temperatures, and you can use a package of silica gel that you get in drugstores, for example, or that you dry flowers with. You can put that in a jar, like a mayonnaise jar or a canning jar, and screw down a nice new lid on top and prevent moisture from getting into the seeds. And then you can go ahead and put those in a refrigerator or in a cool basement or in the bottom of a cabinet in the coolest place in your home. Don't put them in your garage. Don't put them in your attic. The first thing that seeds hate most of all is moisture. The second thing is alternating temperatures. The only time that they want moisture is when they're ready to grow. So if you provide them with moisture and a nice room temperature, they're going to think, wow, party time, time to grow. And they're going to start expending energy. And then all of a sudden, it's light out and they dry out some. And then they kind of go to sleep again, and they do it again over and over again, and soon they expend their energy. They are living things. They expend their energy, and they are no good anymore. They are no longer viable. So you want to keep them cool and as a steady temperature as you can. If you don't have freezer space, then certainly put them in the refrigerator. But if you're going to freeze them, you must follow the directions to dry out the air around them first, so that their seed moisture level is down very low. It's actually technically 8 to 10%. You don't have to worry about that number. If you follow the directions and put some silica gel powder in the jar with the seeds the way we tell you to, you can store them in your freezer for 30, 40, 50 years, and they will still be viable at the end of that.
Okay, fine, but you can store them in refrigerator, and would that be a better place than just a cool room?
Yes, a refrigerator would be a better place, and you can stuff many of those envelopes into one jar.
And
put on a tight lid and stick them in your refrigerator. Don't put them in the box. The box will absorb moisture. Just put the envelopes inside a jar, screw down that nice tight lid, and stick them in the back of your refrigerator somewhere, and you just take out what you need for each planting season.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to talk to Jerry, our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But I think, you know, the average individual says, you know, why, of course, there's never going to be a shortage of food. There's nothing to worry about. You know, this is just all hype to sell seeds. Well, I don't really believe that. I believe that we should start thinking about how we would look after ourselves and our families and perhaps even our neighbors if things really begin to get bad. You know, we have lived really in a truly utopian society. Most societies in the world are not like the society we've lived in. I mean, certainly Europe has seen two terrible wars during the last century. You know, and you go throughout the world and you'll find, whether it be revolutions or all sorts of problems and unrest and social unrest. We've never seen that here, and I think that the average American honestly says nothing could ever really get bad here in America. But if you really believe in God and the fact that God brings judgment upon communities and societies, and and lands that turn against him, if you look at it from that point of view, you already ought to start thinking, well, you know, if God is just, his justice is not going to continue to ignore what's happened in America. So whether you're looking at it from a purely utilitarian point of view or from a spiritual point of view, why, at least go ahead and start making preparations. I think it's a very important thing, and laying in food, but also, of course, if you can grow your own food, why, that's even better. What sort of response? More and more people are beginning to lay in seeds, or are most people just saying, oh, this could never happen?
Well, to tell you the truth, we've had always, we have had a bunch of people who were really enlightened in terms of the wisdom of being able to take care of themselves. And once they get involved in doing it, they never stop. So we always have people who rely on us to help them out with seed. But I have to tell you, you did say that some people might think that this is all about selling seed. The reality is, as a biologist, that is not my important work. That is not my most important work. My most important work is communication. Science communication, communicating the risks of so many of these technologies, for example, Terminator and so on. And, I mean, frankly, Stan, I'll be dirt honest with you, I'm probably a pretty lousy salesman because I often speak before audiences and speak for 2 to 3 hours, and I never once, not even once, do I mention the name Ark Institute, nor do I mention that I have seeds for sale through the Ark Institute, because I have a great passion for communicating what it is that is most important, and that is the precariousness of the global food supply and of water supply here around the globe. As a matter of fact, I don't have to sell seed to make a living. I do that basically to provide the answers or the solutions for the problems that I see, and those problems are the precarious situation of the global food supply and water. And I sometimes talk myself silly talking about those issues, and that's why pandemic influenza is such a threat to the biological well-being of the entire globe, and that's why we're talking out so much on pandemic influenza. But salesman I am not, and I apologize for that. But that's where my heart is. I just wish that people would take it seriously and take care of themselves.
My job is, of course, to make sure at least we get that information out. And again, it's thearkinstitute.com. It's thearkinstitute.com. And we've got Laverne calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Laverne. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I'm a vegetarian, and we know that the genetically altered food comes from a genetic pool of human, animal, insect, whatever, genes. And wouldn't that make it possible for pandemic to jump from human to animal, or from animal to human?
Laverne, it already has done that. It's in cats, and it's 100% fatal to cats.
Why aren't we able to stop this genetically altering God's creation?
But you asked about the flu in other animals. Are you talking about genetically modified
food?
Food going into animals? No. That's not happening.
Well, they have a gene pool, and they use this gene pool of human DNA, animal DNA, all kinds of fish and stuff. When a person eats genetically altered food, and it has the DNA of an animal or a bird, wouldn't that bridge a jump for pandemic flu?
Okay. Wouldn't that bridge the gap for pandemic flu?
No.
Yeah. We're talking about two different things here. First of all, when we genetically engineer things, we are artificially placing those genes in across species, transgenic lines. We're artificially placing them in. They don't naturally occur that way. We're forcing them in. We use chemical scissors to open up one DNA, place in a piece of another DNA, then other chemical scissors to heal the ends of that piece of DNA that you've placed in, to put it in place and glue it in, if you will, using chemical scissors and chemical glue with certain sequences to make that work, enzymes and so on.
And it goes into ourselves?
Excuse me?
When we eat this genetic...
No. We're not doing that every time we eat the stuff, no. This is what is done in the laboratory in order to create transgenic organisms, where you take the genes of one type of organism and place it into another type of organism. So no, you're not getting a transfer of genetic material when you're eating a piece of chicken, for example. You're digesting it. You're not taking in the genes into your DNA and
so on.
How do
we stop this? Genetically altered food, how do we stop it?
Well, I think this is the big problem, is that there's a great deal of money and power there through Monsanto and other people are producing these things. And then, of course, there seems to be almost this death desire. I mean, they're releasing this on the entire world without adequate, studies. I mean, 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line, what happens if we find out that we poisoned a whole generation of people? Instead of doing a limited, study, on a limited population, they suddenly turn it loose on the entire world. And, of course, in my view, that there's some very evil and wicked people out there who could have a entirely different agenda. So, Laverne asks how we can stop it, Jerry. How can we stop it?
Well, you can certainly protest, and if you go out on the Internet, you can go to many different sites that talk about organic and non-GMO foods, and there's a Ban the Terminator organization that you can sign petitions and so on. But unfortunately, Laverne, I don't think we're going to stop it, at least politically. We're not going to stop it until we have some kind of a catastrophe. And unfortunately also, there are all kinds of modified pollens and seeds out there that are already contaminating some of the natural lines. Nature continues to evolve, and as time goes on, these things can either be amplified, more and more of them, or they can also disappear. Because as evolution goes on, and evolution is a real thing that occurs, in all organisms, as it goes on, those things that are most successful are the ones that are selected for in nature. Those genes that are least successful for the survival of an organism are selected against. And eventually things will die out that don't belong there or don't have some purpose for that organism to adapt to its environment. This is a natural process. But unfortunately, I believe, in having done this work myself, I believe that oftentimes the ones that are directing this research are very narrowly focused. They're focused only on the narrow benefits that they see for that particular genetic combination that they're creating, for that particular use.
It's money, isn't it?
Huh?
It's money and power.
Well, of course it's money, yes. But I'm saying, even if they were looking for, say, disease resistance, that's a laudable goal. If they're looking for disease resistance, say for a tomato, and we find out how to make a tomato more disease resistant, and we start doing some genetic engineering for that, all well and good. We're making it possible for the tomato plant to survive all these horrible diseases that could cause starvation and so on. That's a noble goal. But unfortunately, we then get carried away and we create things like Terminators so that our intellectual property isn't stolen by our competitor. And so they make it impossible for the competitor to steal the genetic modifications that we've put into a plant. And now you're looking at, through this very narrow tunnel vision, a genetic technology that'll protect your copyright, will protect your intellectual property, but you're not looking at what the bigger effects are out in the environment and what's going to happen to the global food supply and to life on the planet for seeding plants.
And, of course, the other thing would be if this Terminator technology, this pollen, were to get into other plants. Maybe you have a Terminator technology for in the corn, but what happens if it spreads into other, and increasingly into other products, and suddenly we're unable to grow seeds for the next planting season. Laverne, thank you so very much. And all we can do is suggest that you get educated, go to Jerry's website, or get somebody to get the material out there, and then start talking to people and trying to get them to understand that we are in very, very real trouble. But thank you so very much for calling.
Yes, thank you.
Good night, Laverne. And so, certainly, I think that everyone out there in the listening audience needs to understand this is not an imaginary situation.
No.
Certainly, Jerry has a great deal on her website. We carry the book by Jeffrey Smith, Seeds of Deception. That's Seeds of Deception. We have a 4-tape set on genetic engineering, and it's so important that you understand that there are people out there who have a different worldview. Some of them may very well be motivated by money. Some of them may be motivated by greed, but some of them may have another agenda. The major thing is we've got to be aware that there's a problem, and we've got to begin looking after ourselves and certainly our families. And that's one of the beautiful things about having the ability to have seeds that are not contaminated. That's the heirloom seeds that are available from the Ark Institute at thearkinstitute.com. Well, Jerry, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Stan, I guess I would reiterate that we're looking at new reports from the U.S. government on the sad state of global grain supply. Here in the United States especially, we are going to have very low supplies. We are now looking at only 57 days of grain. And if you say, oh, well, I don't eat grain, baloney, you don't eat grain. You eat bread, you eat chicken, you eat beef, you eat hamburger rolls and so on, you're eating grain. Your cereal and so on. If you're on a low-carb diet, it doesn't make any difference. You're eating meat, and meat eats grain. And so you are grain-dependent. So it's now in global short supply. The United States is an importer of grains as well as an exporter. We kind of have things going in and out. And the net effect is we are lower than what we need. And so we are net having to produce more or import more. We are very concerned here at the Ark Institute for the fact that we have many potential interruptions of global food production, but especially the potential avian flu or bird flu. It is not a hoax. It is not a conspiracy. It is a natural event that occurs every century. We have 3 to 4 pandemics a century. We have had 2 milder ones in most of our lifetimes, but in 1918, we had the most severe of the last century. H5N1 is currently looking so much like the 1918 avian influenza pandemic that we are exceedingly concerned that now we're 6.4 billion people on the earth to feed and low grain stocks around the world, that food may become the collateral damage. Food may become the second wave of deaths around the globe. We would encourage people, wherever you get your grains, your food supplies, wherever you get your seeds, we would ask people to start putting in a good supply for this year. You'll never spend your money wrong. You will be able to eat it. Let's say this doesn't happen for a year to two. You'll be able to eat it then, a year or two, but in the meantime, you know you've got yourself a little insurance policy for yourself and your family. By the way, how to reach us, it's 1-800-255-1912, arkinstitute.com. Get your free download of Dr. Woodson's monograph on how to take care of your family at home while quarantined with pandemic flu.
Hold that thought for just a moment, and we'll be right back here. Well, I want you to give your website out and your telephone number one more time, Jerry.
Okay. It's ARK, A-R-K, institute.com. All is one word. 1-800-255-1912. And if you want to be on an alert list for any of these problems, send me an email today at arkinstitute@charter.net and put alert in the subject. That's all you have to do, alert in the subject. If you want me to have your name and address to send you materials, go ahead and put it there, but not necessary. Just put alert, and we'll go ahead and get you materials. As the news is breaking, I'll send an alert out and let you know about it.
God bless. Thanks very much, Jerry.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Jerry Guidetti, and of course, Let me just comment on this genetic engineered food. We carry this wonderful book. It's called Seeds of Deception by Jeffrey Smith. It's the best information we have. We have another small book. It's called GMOs, Beware of a Genetically Modified Food. We have a four-tape set on genetically modified food. You need to understand what this is all about and how to discuss it intelligently. And then, of course, we really believe that there are some very real problems. If we were to have any sort of a major interruption in supplies, you know, you would not only want to have food on hand, you'd certainly want to have vitamins and minerals and the other things to maintain your health. Because the greatest protection you would have from contracting the avian epidemic, or anything else for that matter, would be lots of vitamin C and lots of vitamin D, and certainly the magnesium and the selenium, and some of the natural products like oil of oregano and certainly elderberry juice. That's actually very, very good against flu, at least it's been suggested in the past. So we have actually put together a list of all of these things. If you'd like a copy of our health catalog, we'd be glad to send it to you. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you can get the book or the either one of the books or the four tapes on genetic engineering. You can get certainly our health catalog there. And then if you're interested in getting any of these products, let us know. Again, our number 1-800-544-8927. And all I would say is that I believe we're moving into very, very difficult times. If you see what's happened to the stock market, the world stock market around the world this last couple of weeks, I mean, it's lost several $1 trillion in value. And we've seen the stock market going up and down in the United States, but it's all being manipulated. The government wants to control your perception. The market were to drop and drop dramatically, people would begin to panic, and so they've run this up, they've run this down. They know exactly what they're doing. Everything is controlled. And this is the unfortunate thing. There's something called the Plunge Protection Team that was established during the Reagan years so that people would not panic when the markets were contracting. Well, I think we're in some very, very difficult times. Not only, of course, from a financial point of view, but from a moral and spiritual point of view, because I really believe that America as a nation has turned its back on God. There's some very wicked people who hate God working within our system today. And you can see this in the decisions of our Supreme Court. So pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be back until we're together again. May the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. The views happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we're going to welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you're here in the Central Coast of California. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Ron Brown, and we always enjoy having Ron on the program. He supports Radio Liberty, but more than that, he's got a great deal of information about what's happening financially and on the various gold and silver markets. And I think that we've actually witnessing a beautiful example of market manipulation. You have to understand that gold is the foundation of monetary systems, and if you have not yet read the essay that was written back in 1966 by Alan Greenspan, you need to read it. In fact, we have that included in our financial tsunami syllabus. And, of course, along with, of course, an article written by Paul Volcker in April of 2005, where he talks about the fact that we are on the brink of some very serious financial problems. And as he says, it doesn't know whether it's going to be sooner or later or with a bang or a whimper, but there's no incidence in all history where a nation has been spending more than it's actually taking in indefinitely, and sooner or later why the world banks are going to stop lending us money and the whole system's going to come tumbling down. And then he talks about really what a wonderful time we've had as we've massively increased the money supply throughout the world. And he goes on to say, you know, look at the great impact we've had throughout the world. Let me just quote what he said. I don't want to let stand as the epitaph of what has been an unparalleled period of success for the American economy and of enormous potential for the world at large. Now, what is he saying? Well, all you have to do is pour a lot of money, create a lot of money out of nothing, pour it into the economy, and everybody's rich. And they're investing, and they're getting richer, and you keep pouring money in, and you have this appearance of wealth. But in truth, of course, the value of money is just declining. It has to decline, because there's only a certain amount of goods and products out there. But not only have we done that, but Japan and many of the other countries have created all sorts of paper money that has nothing behind it. It's created out of nothing. But eventually comes the time of where you've got to begin to restrict the amount of money that's out there, or the whole thing collapses, money becomes worthless. Inflation has nothing to do with rising prices. It has to do with increasing the money supply. They've increased the money supply dramatically. And, of course, here you've got all these people with all this money. They're just looking for investments. They're buying up everything they can. They're buying up our major corporations. They're buying our stocks. They're buying our bonds. They're buying our property. And pretty soon, there's not going to be much left to buy. Actually, foreign companies and foreign individuals own $3 trillion more of the United States than we owe of them, and the entire value of the entire American stock market is only $18 to $19 trillion. And if we continue along the road we're going, how long will it be before there's absolutely nothing there? Well, Ron Brown, thank you so very much for being with us.
It's always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you see going on in the financial markets. Why don't we wait until we just get through this break, and then we can begin talking about what's happening to the stock market. Dramatic here this last week, what's happening to the gold and silver market, and where you think we're going, based upon the fact that you've been at this, well, almost as long as I have, and we've seen one of the most beautiful example of manipulation of the markets here I've ever seen, just here in this last month or so. Well, Ron, why don't you pick this up? What do you see happening?
Well, that was a very good introduction. It sure covered the bases, Dr. Stan. What we're really experiencing right now is accelerating showdown between the forces of inflation versus the forces of deflation. And, of course, over the last 25 years, or actually the last, even further, way back further than that, as we continue to print money to forestall any recession, the higher the debt goes, the more important it is to not allow a recession. So since 1980, they've just been pumping money into the system hand over fist to try to create this illusion of prosperity that you were talking about. But as you do that, eventually inflation fears or dollar worries start to build, and people start to seek the refuge, or they see interest rates rising, which threatens the economy. So people start to seek the refuge of tangibles, which is typically gold and silver. And, of course, as gold and silver rise, that's kind of like a barometer that's predicting a real crisis ahead. It's a barometer of confidence in the economy. So at some point, and that's what we've been seeing the last 6 months, gold has gone from, what, 500, reached about $730 here 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, and the whole world is about to go into a panic. So at some point, the powers to be, the international bankers, the central banks of the world, have to unite and come in and act tough and act like they're fighting inflation. So that's why we've been raising interest rates for the last, 6 months to a year, to create the illusion that we're real serious about fighting inflation. But the reality is we're printing money faster and faster and faster and trying to cover up what we're doing. But the world sees through it.
Yeah, and of course, I thought really it was very interesting that gold dropped down almost to 550, maybe 560, but today it closed almost at 580. So it may be that we've hit a bottom. What are your thoughts on that?
I think we're very close to the bottom. We've really seen, and keep in mind, I deal in physicals, real gold and real silver, and through this whole calamity, I've not had one client call wanting to sell their gold or silver. Now, admittedly, I've had people call saying, what the heck is going on? But what is going on is really nothing more than, as you said, an orchestrated manipulation, and it's done through the leveraged markets like the futures market.
And, of course, it's done with the help of the major banks, Goldman Sachs, J.P.
Sure.
Morgan, and Morgan Stanley. They're all in the market selling short. And, of course, how do they know that they're not going to lose out? Well, of course, I believe that they have, working closely with the Fed and with the Treasury Department. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, the ability to create money out of nothing, the ability to manipulate money supply, to be able to manipulate the economic cycles. I mean, if you can do that, of course, you can make great wealth for yourself, and you can also impoverish many people. And the big problem today is so many people are head over heels in debt. So many people, for instance, have taken out adjustable rate mortgages. And Alan Greenspan was encouraging people to do that. Now, why would he tell people to take out an adjustable rate mortgage? Because as the interest rate goes up, why the interest rate, on those adjustable rate mortgages can skyrocket to the point where people cannot possibly make their payments and they're going to lose their homes. Why would the chairman of the Federal Reserve System, actually encourage people to do things that are totally irresponsible and allow people to buy homes with nothing down? And even some of these loans, you don't even have to make monthly payments. You don't make a monthly payment. It's just that the principal that you owe increases every month. What sort of madness is that? And certainly many people were concerned about the carry trade, where the hedge funds were moving massive amounts of money from one country to another, borrowing in Japan at 0.5% and lending in Iceland for 10.25%, or even here in the United States for 4%, and of course making tremendous profits on this. And everybody said to Alan Greenspan, you've got to start regulating the carry trade and the hedge funds and the derivatives. And Alan Greenspan said, oh no, there's nothing to worry about. But I think that Alan Greenspan intentionally has set us up for the greatest economic collapse in all of recorded history. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, and our suggestion to you, and I'm sure Ron would agree, is get out of debt. Get out of debt. Get out of debt. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, as we've been discussing for the last 4 years, I always come back to the point that this whole debt system has become a Ponzi scheme. So you ask, why does Greenspan come up, you know, they came up with this real estate boom and lowering interest rates and the variable rate mortgage and all the tricks they have come up with to get people further and further into debt. And of course, part of it is you have to keep the system growing. You can never allow it to contract, and so they have to come up with more devious and more magical ways of inflating the system. And of course, you can't do that forever, and I think we're really approaching that day of reckoning. Because, you know, the foreigners, we're dependent on foreigners to loan us, what, $2.5 billion or more every day, and they're seeing less and less reason to want to do that. So as our creditors cut us off, then the day of reckoning will soon come.
And I agree with you totally, and I think that people have to begin preparing for some very difficult times. And I'm encouraging everybody with an adjustable rate mortgage, get that thing over into a fixed mortgage and beginning to do everything you can to get out of debt. Get out of debt on your credit cards. Quit buying things, you know. You know, it is, people are buying things that they can't afford right now. An awful lot of young people have borrowed money, you know, for their college loans. Now, actually, there are some alternatives that you can borrow money at a lower fixed rate. Get out of the high, you know, interest rate loans that you're in. Right now, certainly, there are an opportunity to refinance your college loans. Do it, and don't put this off. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. You know, I think back whenever I'm driving around town, I drive past a high school, and I see all these brand-new cars out. I think back to when I was a kid growing up in high school, if you got a $200 clunker, and spent your time trying to keep it running, you were happy. But you know all those cars that are being bought for these teenagers, and you very seldom see a used car anymore, an old car. They're all new cars. So everyone's going into debt. They've made it so easy to buy these nice cars, and everyone has this perception that they're doing well, but they're in debt to their gills, and at some point the debt system has to implode on itself, and I think that's what's starting to happen as we speak.
And of course, the thing is that most people aren't old enough to remember the last really major one we had, which was, well, 1987 was not too bad, but certainly the 1980, that was, what, 26 years ago. I mean, I saw so many of my friends who were doctors who thought that they could play this system and borrow money and build condominiums and build apartment houses and sell them and make a lot of money. And really, it's greed that drives the market. But then when the market turns against them and the interest rates go up so that nobody can borrow money to buy the condominiums or buy the apartment houses, and that's where fear sets in. The market is governed by greed and fear. Greed when things are good and fear when, of course, things turn against you. And I saw many of those doctors, good doctors, but of course they weren't very good businessmen. And I know one of them, when I got around to retiring, and I asked my friend Jerry, when are you going to retire? And he looked at me and shook his head and said, I have lost everything. I can't retire. And he, you know, 65 at the same time I was. So do not think that you can play this system. I mean, certainly not now. You may have been able to, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when interest rates were low. But now that interest rates are high, and I think they're going much, much higher than we've been allowed to believe. They're talking, well, maybe it'll go up another 0.25% or maybe even at the most 0.5%. I think it's going to go a lot higher than that. What are your thoughts on that, Ron?
Absolutely. You know, we're so dependent on foreigners to finance our folly, and the dollar is weak, so who would want to loan money to the U.S. in dollar terms to earn 5 or 6%? Return on their money or interest when they see that the dollar is losing 6 to 10 to 12 to 15% a year. So it's going to take ever more higher interest rates to get people to loan the money to us. It's the same as an individual. If you've got good credit, you can go down and get a loan at prime, but if you've got bad credit, you go to a pawn shop and pay 16, 17, 18% interest, and we're become a bad risk for anyone that wants to loan us money.
And so I think that people really have to begin to understand that we are on the edge of really what I call a financial tsunami, and I think everything is in place for this whole thing to come tumbling down on top of us. And, you know, there are lots of people, a lot smarter than I am, who think that the price of oil is going to continue going up. Now, you know, $3 a gallon is pretty tough to pay, but you do it. You bite your lip and you pay the $3. But what happens when oil goes up to $150 a barrel and you're paying $6 or $7 a gallon for gasoline? Not only what's that going to do you to, what's going to do to the trucking industry, to the farming industry, to the airline industry, to the fertilizer industry? People don't understand how dependent we are on oil now. There's lots of oil up there. Why won't they let them drill in Anwar? Because they want to keep shortages. Why won't they go into those great oil fields that are up in the Arctic Ocean? And believe me, we've got far more oil than they do in Iran or Iraq or Saudi Arabia. But we're not allowed to get into that. They're intentionally creating this sort of a problem. And, you know, it would take years before we would actually be able to tap into those and be able to get those supplies out. So they've created an unsolvable problem that is going to have a profound impact on everyone listening to this program over the next couple of years. Well, you know, as you see things unfolding, you know, are many people actually taking advantage of the drop in the price of gold and silver to purchase more, or are they simply sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what happens?
They've been sitting on the sidelines until the last two or three days, which has probably been wise, because once you have a crash like we had, where just, you know, silver was at 15:30 or so intraday here, what, 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, and all of a sudden it just collapses, and it's nothing more than a margin massacre in the futures market that's causing this, but it scares the bejeebers out of people. So you want to just kind of sit back and say, how far will this thing go? Now I think people are starting to see it's starting to stabilize. We're down at a very strong support level on the charts. So I think more and more people are starting to jump on board. That's at least what I'm experiencing.
All right, fine. Of course, most people were pretty well invested anyway, so they really didn't have a lot of money to jump in and take advantage when the price went down. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question, you have a comment, maybe you disagree, give us a call, or maybe you'd like to ask Ron what he thinks you should do. And of course, Ron's not a financial consultant any more than I am. I'm just a historian who's read what has happened, you know, down through the centuries, and it's happened over and over again. What's happening today is nothing new. It's simply that the ability to actually, you know, manipulate things is so much more readily available today than it was certainly during the 1930s, or even it was in 1980. I mean, they have an amazing ability to control what is happening, but there are economic cycles which they cannot undo, and the great tragedy is, I personally believe, an awful lot of people are going to lose literally everything they have. In fact, just today, why, Delta Airlines had gone to the bankruptcy courts and asked if they could simply renege on the pension program that they'd had for their pilots. Now, these are people, many of them, I have a good friend who works here and helps me at Radio Liberty, who actually is a retired Delta pilot, and he gets all sorts of, you know, benefits, health benefits and drug benefits, and Delta's just going to say, you know, we just can't afford it, and probably the bankruptcy company will, or judges will say, that's fine. And as soon as we see that, you know, this is happening with many of our major corporations, are just walking away from the pension plans that they, you know, have promised to pay. Now, maybe they never should have promised in the first place, and maybe the unions made unreasonable demands. It doesn't really matter. What's going to happen now is we're going to see an awful lot of people who really thought that they were going to get pensions, and I know we have a lot of listeners back in the Detroit, Flint area there in Michigan. A lot of the people who think they were going to get pensions just aren't going to get them, and a lot of people who thought they were going to have health benefits just aren't going to get them. And what most people don't understand is just 11 years from now, Social Security is going to start having to pay out more than it's taking in, and they're going to have to go into the Social Security Trust Fund. And you know what's in the Social Security Trust Fund? IOUs from the government. The government doesn't have any money to pay the IOUs. That's part of the national debt. So you've got the Social Security's got to come up with the money. The Trust Fund is bankrupt. The government... where's the government going to get the money? And I think we're in some very real problems for many people in America. Well, Ron Christian, I'm sure you're watching many of the things that are going on in the financial markets. Do you have any other thoughts about some of the things that are unfolding?
Well, as you were talking about the pension plans and everything starting to collapse and not pay off, see, that's a further deflationary thing where the economy is not going to grow fast enough to keep the debt. And so as people are getting squeezed day by day, whether they've lost their job or their raises aren't keeping up with the cost of living or they've just lost their pension plan, it's going to be harder and harder to keep this economy sustained when everyone is going broke step by step. So we're really having a showdown. And what's interesting is that, you know, the poor Fed chairman, he's in an unenviable position of having to inflate the system and yet convince the world that he's fighting inflation. So he has to be like a magician. With his left hand, he has to pretend to be fighting inflation, and that's what raising these interest rates is all about, to convince people they're serious about inflation. But as you mentioned earlier, inflation isn't rising prices or even rising interest rates. Inflation is the amount of money and debt in the circulation. So if you raise interest rates with one hand, but with the other hand, you just print money as fast as you can to shove it out the back door to prop up the markets to keep them from collapsing, then you're inflating like crazy while pretending that you aren't. So it always reminds me of the story I heard that a politician is the only person who, when he's being led out of town to be tarred and feathered, will jump out in front and act like he's leading the parade. And that's exactly what the Fed chairman's doing. He is inflating like the devil to keep the system from imploding while at the same time acting like he's fighting inflation. They're going through the motions of letting the markets drop. And if they let them drop too far, they're going to really create a recession that gets out of control. So very quickly, I suspect they're going to have to start printing money faster and faster, which means interest rates eventually are going to just keep going up because they have to keep up the fight to pretend, you know, act like they're fighting inflation. And yet as interest rates rise, what happens to the real estate bubble? It gets harder and harder to keep this house of cards afloat.
Well, I think it's so interesting that they have suddenly done away with the M3, which was an analysis of the total amount of money and credit that is out there in all the banks and all the entire world, not only me. The credit, you see, what people don't understand, there's one thing, money. I mean, that's what you have in your pocket. But then, of course, built upon that, you have all sorts of credit. And you can make bank entries and create money that way, even though there is no cash behind it. And so M3 has always been a means by which you could see what was happening, and suddenly the Fed has announced they're not going to publish M3 anymore because it's just too expensive to actually gather all those figures. And as Congressman Ron Paul said in one of the meetings there with Mr. Bernanke, why, you know, what do you mean it's too expensive? You can create money out of nothing. Why are you worried about the expense of letting us know what you're doing? Well, we do have the figures. Those of you who don't know about these zip figures, we have those. And certainly within the last 3 months, why, they have actually increased the amount of debt, you know, of course, based upon credit by $1 trillion in three-month period. I mean, and at the end of last year, it was 40.6 trillion. At the end of March, it was 41.6 trillion. If you'd like those figures, you can give us a call. We'll send them to you. They're called the zip figures put out by the Fed. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was just commenting about something they call the zip figures or the L1 figures that are put out by the Federal Reserve System. A very, very a complicated chart. In fact, I talked to Bob Chapman about it. He assures me he'll be covering that in his international forecast of this week. But what they do is they compile all the debt, either national debt, the state debt, the local debt, the individual debt, the credit card debt, the car debt, the home debt. This is all the debt. Now, that isn't necessarily money in circulation or a credit in circulation. It's debt. But the debt at the end of December of 2005, about 6 months ago, the debt at that time was $40.6 trillion, and believe me, $1 trillion is a lot of money. But within a 3-month period, so that by the end of March of this year, The debt, the total debt of the United States, had raised from $40.6 trillion to $41.6 trillion, which is an increase of debt of about 11 or 12%, a phenomenal rate unparalleled in all history. And, of course, this is what you see at the end. And eventually they have to get rid of this debt or the whole system collapses. And I think there are an awful lot of people who are investing in making unsound investments. People with a lot of money are investing in hedge funds, and they're buying all sorts of junk bonds and bonds that may very well default, but they cannot believe they're going to default. And so they're investing because they have to make, you know, high returns. But if these things start to default, why, you're going to see a cascading effect. Of course, the loans are guaranteed by derivatives, and there's something between $300 and $350 trillion in derivatives out there. And if they begin to unwind, it could take down the whole economic system and many of our major banks and lending institutions. Have you been reading at all about that, Ron?
About the ZIP or?
No, well, about both of them.
Well, yeah, and you know, doing away with M3 is just another way of keeping the charade going so people really can't see what's going on. And then, of course, private enterprise is always going to come out and figure out a way to show what's going on. But, you know, I've always wondered, or I used to say when I was younger, before I realized how evil the whole system was, I used to say, well, they've run out of tricks. There's nothing they can do now. And the one thing I have learned in 28 years is that they never run out of tricks. Jim Sinclair just wrote an interesting article on how he thinks they're camouflaging what's going on. And if you got just a few minutes, I'll just cover that with you.
You're right ahead.
I thought it was very interesting. There's a lot of people, as we've been talking about, that want to dump their dollars worldwide. And so the example he gave was, let's assume there's a lot of people who want to dump their dollars and trade them for Japanese yen. Now, if that were allowed to happen, by dumping the dollars, you would drive the dollar lower and at the same time drive the Japanese yen higher. But the Japanese government doesn't want that to happen because they want to keep their currency weak versus the dollar so they can continue to trade with us. So they have a vested interest in not allowing that to happen. And, of course, we have a vested interest in not allowing the dollar to collapse. So here's how they go about it, and it's just like magic. And the way he explained it is the Japanese central bank would create the money out of nothing to buy back these unwanted dollars that are being dumped into the market. Now, Japan is stuck with all these dollars, so what they would do is immediately turn around and redeposit those dollars into the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, who has a float account for the Central Bank of Japan. And so, on behalf of Japan, the Federal Reserve Bank of U.S. Treasury bonds to strengthen the dollar. So it's just kind of hocus-pocus magic. And, of course, all they're doing is putting off the Day of Reckoning again.
Well, of course, I think the Day of Reckoning is going to come, and I think that people have better begin preparing for it. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And certainly as I was preparing to come out this evening, there was a fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal talking about all the money there is and the term they used was sloshing around out there in the world. Now, what's this money that's sloshing around? Well, this is the money in the hedge funds. It's money that have been made. And you're talking about hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars, that has been created simply out of nothing. And, of course, it's profits that people have made by various types of financial deals. And now they're trying to invest this money to get a good income out of it. The trouble is, how do you get, a reliable income on this in times like this when inflation is running? Well, it's really running about 8%. The most you're going to get on a bond here in the United States is 4.25%. Well, you have to begin to investing in risky things, junk bonds, and then what happens if they turn bad? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ron Brown. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And if you have a question or comment for Ron, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have something that you think is important to bring out as far as what's happening economically, because I think that the United States is in the worst financial situation we have ever been in, really, in the entire history of our nation. You know, certainly, at least back in the 1930s, we had a gold-backed currency. Maybe they took away the gold from the average individual, but at least there was that gold anchor, and the Fed could only print a certain amount of money. Now they can print all the money they want to. Not only that, but after August 15, 1971, every country in the world could create immediate prosperity by printing money. And that's exactly what all the countries of the world have done. And all the countries of the world working in concert have flooded the world with money. And it's all paper, it's entries, it's all just bank entries, but there's absolutely nothing behind it, as Paul Volcker said. I mean, we've had a great run, and he's absolutely right. We have had a great run. We've created tremendous prosperity, but it's all artificial prosperity based upon absolutely nothing. Money is something that has intrinsic value and cannot be inflated and cannot be created out of nothing. And eventually, of course, the day of reckoning is going to come, or you're going to have to destroy the economic system and start it all over again. You're going to have a great war, or maybe a great epidemic, or certainly a great famine, or, my goodness, those things don't sound like they came out of Revelation 6:8, don't they? You know, and I look and behold a pale horse, and the rider upon him is death, and power was given unto them, or Hades followed close behind, and power was given unto them to kill a quarter of the world's population by the sword, and with hunger, and with pestilence, and with the beasts of the world. And could that be what really is coming upon us? Is there a spiritual component, an element to what's going on? Well, we've actually written a little pamphlet. It's called The History of Money. And it goes not only into what's happening from a physical point of view, but what's happening from a spiritual point of view. That's The History of Money, and it's available from Radio Liberty. And we've got Tom calling from Tennessee. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Well, good evening. Or good morning.
Good morning. I guess in Tennessee it's good morning, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Barely a half hour. Listen.
You hold on there. We'll be with you in just a moment, as we're going to have to bring all of our stations back on, but we'll be right back with Tom from Tennessee. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And we have Tom calling us from Tennessee back there. It's after the witching hour. But before we get to Tom, Ron, I want you to get your telephone number out and so people can know how to get in touch with you and get your information.
Surely, if anyone would like to call me, my number is 1-800-595-0565. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And Ron does basically help us. And, well, let's go to Tom and see what he has to say. Tom, did you have a question or comment?
Well, just maybe more or less a question, I guess. I'd like to ask Ron what he thinks about the silver, since it's gone down so much in the last week or two, as silver has taken a dive. I bought quite a bit of silver when it was below 10, as a matter of fact, a little below 9. And I'd just like to have his comments on where he thinks silver's going. I've heard lots of rumors about Hong Kong buying up a lot of silver and that sort of stuff, and would just like to have his opinion.
Well, you know, a lot of people wait to jump into a market after it's already proven itself, when the risk-reward gets disfavorable. And of course, when silver went from what, 9 in December to 15 in what, 6 months, it was really getting ahead of itself. It was getting into a speculative boom. But the people who bought the real McCoy are sitting there, they're not worried. It's the people that have been leveraging and trying to get rich quick on futures contracts where they're leveraged 5-1 or 10-1 that have literally been wiped out. So I think the lesson we need to learn is don't leverage. As Dr. Stan was just talking, as people find it harder and harder to keep up with the cost of living, they tend to take more risk to try to get ahead of the game, and yet whenever you're doing that, you're leaving yourself exposed to a major setback, and that's what's happened to anyone that's on leverage. But literally, we need to step back and say, has anything changed? In the last 3 weeks, have they solved the debt crisis? Have they solved the Iraqi problem? Have they solved the dollar crisis? No, nothing has changed. So all we've seen is an orchestration by the central banks of the world to help correct this market to keep it from spinning out of control. So in reality, what they've done is given us a bargain to step in and buy because nothing's really changed. So I think this is the time to start just loading the boat.
And I certainly agree. Tom, I think silver has a greater upside potential than gold simply because of there's really more gold out now available in the markets than there is silver. Silver, at one time we had, I think, $2 billion of silver or 2 billion ounces of silver here in the United States, but that's all gone. There are no large supplies of silver anywhere in the world, and most of the silver mines have shut down. Most of the silver that's mined now is mined as a byproduct of copper and zinc mining, and so they're barely able to actually meet the requirements. And silver is used in so many manufacturing processes today, whether it be television screens or computers or all sorts of things that they're using the silver for. So if we get into a tight situation, the sky's the limit. And there's some people I know that my good friend Bob Chapman thinks that silver has to get up to $175 an ounce just to have the level that it reached back in 1980. And I'm not an expert at it, but I would be far more bullish on silver than I would be on gold, although I think you should be in everything. I think you should be diversified, and the three rules of investing is diversify, diversify, diversify.
Yes. Well, you think probably having the physical silver, the physical metal like I do, is much better than the futures and the speculation.
Well, what would you say to that, Ron?
Well, absolutely. Just to give you an idea of how they manipulate these markets, think back to November, December. Let's say silver's trading around $9 an ounce, and you decide you want to speculate in the futures market, so you come in with $9 an ounce, you're buying 5,000 ounce contracts, so each contract is $45,000 to $50,000, let's say. In order to control that, all you had to put up was like $4,000. So let's say you bought one contract at 9 and it goes to 10, you've more than doubled the money that you put up because your $4,000 account is now approaching $10,000. So now you're feeling pretty brilliant and smart about it. You think you're the most brilliant trader in the world. So the logical thing to do is, hey, let's play with their money. This is my chance to get rich quick. So you use that money to parlay into a second contract. And as silver goes up, you're just euphoric. And eventually you start saying, maybe I better put some trailing stops in there so if the market ever corrects, it'll get me out before it collapses all the way. Well, that's when these central bankers start to realize the market's getting vulnerable. So all they have to do at that time is to start selling into the market and selling until they force the price down. And then it starts to trigger those stops orders that people put in. Stop loss orders, and once you do that in a market that's been that euphoric, all of a sudden it just becomes a free fall because when they feel those stop losses, you're selling, and that drives it even further down, and you end up having what's called a margin massacre, where they just flush the market out, and there's blood in the streets, and all the speculators who were so happy, two, three, 4 weeks ago, thinking they were brilliant, now they've lost everything.
Remember, the market is driven by greed and by fear. And you don't want to be in either situation, Tom. But I'll just sit exactly where you are, and you call us back in about a year, and I think you'll be very, very happy.
Well, thank you very much.
God bless, and thanks so much for calling. All right, that was Tom calling from Tennessee, and of course, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Ron, what really puzzles me is, how can it be that there's still plenty of 90% silver bags out there? Because, you know, there are only a certain number of them, and I know an awful lot of people have bought them, and there still seem to be almost an unlimited supply of them.
I think we're in kind of a, I don't want to call it a stalemate, but there's been a lot of people, for example, that bought silver back in the 80s, or 79 and 80 at $35, $40, $50, and they've been sitting on this stuff at a loss for all these years. And then we went into the Y2K crisis, where a lot of people who had never bought gold or silver in their life stepped in and bought it on a rally out of fear. They didn't really have an understanding for the purpose for buying silver. So I think there's a lot of people that have been waiting for a rally to sell into. And so I think there's been just enough people selling the gold and silver they bought back in the past to meet the demand without creating a shortage of silver. And so I think once, and I think I've said this on the air, that once silver breaks through 15, I think you're going to see it gallop towards 20 and then to 25. And as that happens, then all the people who've been scared in the last 3-4 weeks will start jumping back on board. The demand for silver, as people wake up to inflation fears, is going to overwhelm the supply of those bags, and that's when we'll see the bags take off and go to a high premium.
All right, fine. So I think it's just a matter of time, and the question is, when is it going to happen? And of course, your guess is as good as mine. But I thought it was really so interesting that after gold dropping precipitously down to the 550, a 560 level, how low did it get? Do you recall?
Somewhere around under 550, right in that neighborhood.
And of course, it closed almost at 580 today. I think that it's really going, I think, about 578, 79, somewhere there?
Well, today, yeah, it was, I've got it right here on a chart. I'll just have to pull it up real quick.
Anyway, of course, it's
584 on August gold.
Really? Okay, fine. Well, it bounced off the bottom. So I think that this was a very, very temporary setback. But my belief is that it's probably going to build from this base, and how long it'll take to get back where it was, I have no idea. But I think probably both gold and silver are going to begin moving up again, because the essentials are essentially the same. We have a world which is awash with worthless money. We have, fantastic values in homes. I know people who tell me about how their home is worth $50,000 or $1 million. They bought it maybe for, $200,000, and now it's worth $1 million. And they've forgotten what happened, of course, in Japan. I mean, at one time, the property values in Tokyo City were worth more than the entire stock market and all the property in the United States, but there was nothing behind it. It was all speculation. And with a bubble burst in Japan back in 1990 and 1991, a lot of that property lost 90% of its value. Could that happen here in the United States? Of course it could happen, because there's nothing behind value. What makes something valuable? Well, people are willing to pay for it, or what they're willing to, the money they're willing to put up. If you have artificially created lots of money, and the country is sloshing with money, and the world economy is sloshing with money, and that's the term I just read today, I thought it was so apropos for what's going on, that people will bid up the price of houses. And actually, of course, we saw this, at the height of the housing boom, where people would put the house up for sale, and somebody would come in and say, I'll buy it. Somebody would come in and say, I'll give you $10,000 more. I want that house. And somebody else would come in and say, I'll give you $10,000, or I'll give you $20,000 more. Then the fellow would give you $10,000 more. And they were bidding up the price of those homes. And people were buying homes, and two or three homes, and being, selling them. They were buying unfinished homes by the time the homes were finished, were completely built. Why, of course, the value had gone up $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. That happened to a friend of mine who, totally unsophisticated. It was almost as like there was a money tree out there, and you could simply take the money off the money tree. But, of course, all good things will come to an end. And it's all artificial. It's all created by the invisible people, these people of great wealth, who rule the world, who create money out of nothing, who run the great banks of the world. And, of course, the most carefully kept secret in America today. is that banks create money out of nothing. Let me repeat that. Banks create money out of nothing. So how can they create money out of nothing? Very simply, that's the way the system is set up. That's the way the system is played. And not only do they create money out of nothing, they lend it to you and they have the audacity to charge interest. And you've got to put up security, and if you can't pay out the interest, they're going to take what you have, and so they create money out of nothing, they lend it to you, and then when you can't pay that, they end up taking what is something tangible, whether it be your home or your farm or your car or your business. That's the way the game is played. And until the American people understand that, they can't understand anything that's going on in the world today.
Well, we're heading toward the gigantic foreclosure, just like you explained. And what's really scary about this real estate bubble, you know, when the dot-com bubble burst back in 2000, a lot of people lost 60, 70, 80. I've heard people lost 90, 95% of their savings. And that just wipes you out. But the real estate bubble is much worse than that because, at least in the, if you had your savings invested in the stocks and you lost 80 or 90%, you still had 10 to 20% left. But in the real estate, especially with all the money that was made out in California, these people start buying spec houses, buying two and three houses on high leverage, and they're buying them and renting them out. And you see, once you leverage, if you bought a house to live in, then you'll go through whatever you can to keep that house. But if you bought three or four houses on just speculation, once that market tops and starts heading down, those people are going to run for exits. And so what I think you've seen over the last 3, 4, 5 years is that you've seen the building boom, building houses for which there is no demand. They were just all built on speculation. And when this market finally tops out, and I think we've already seen it top out, it's just in the early stages, then you're going to see a panic somewhere down the road.
My understanding, and I don't have the exact figures, but I was reading this last week, I mean, there are several million unsold houses all across America today, and a lot of these are houses that are spec houses that have been built on borrowed money. And you build a house on borrowed money, and of course you got to pay interest on it till you get it sold, and as long as somebody's coming along, and there's lots of money available, and they're going to take that house off your hands, you're going to come out making a good profit on it. You know, maybe $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in this house that you built. But what happens when there's no money available? What happens when the interest rates are going up? What happens when there aren't people there to buy your house, and you're sitting there paying interest on the money that you borrowed, you know, for that house? And eventually you get to the point where you're going to have to start dropping the price of the house to get somebody to buy it. But then what happens if still nobody buys it? And that's what happened back in the 1980s. The banks would not lend money. Of course, the interest rates were getting up to a 20 or 21%. And, of course, the banks would not lend money. And what happened to all my doctor friends who, you know, were out there, they were going to just play this system and get rich quick? Suddenly they have all these apartments and these condominiums. They got to pay the interest on it. And, of course, there's just no way that they're ever going to be able to continue paying these massive interest payments indefinitely. And, of course, they go into foreclosure and everything is lost. And ladies and gentlemen, if you read a little pamphlet we put together on the history of money, this has happened time and again in America. It happened in 1811, and it happened, you know, in 1832, and it happened repeatedly in the mid-1800s and right up until 1907. I think the last great monetary contraction was 1907, and they were all manipulated, and it was because of the people of this country realized how the banking system was fleecing them, that they demanded that the federal government do something to stop the banks from continuing to rape and pillage the population. And that's when the bankers came up with something called the Federal Reserve System. And they sold it to the people as, well, this is how we're going to keep the bankers from raping and pillaging the population. We're going to have a Federal Reserve, a government system that is going to control the wicked bankers. And not one person in 1,000 realized that this was the bankers' program and the bankers were going to control it for the banking interest. Well, Ron, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I remember back when they reading about it, I wasn't there, but Nelson Aldrich, who's the paternal grandfather of Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller, he was a senator, at the time, and he's the one that introduced the first central banking bill, and the world and our Congress just rejected it out of hand. So what they did is create a banking panic and then came out with the same bill, but they renamed it the Federal Reserve Act, and Aldrich, who's known as the central banker, went parading around campaigning against it. So it was passed, and it's just that's how tricky these bankers are.
And of course, when everybody saw that Nelson Aldrich was against it, why immediately they were in favor of it, without realizing he was part of the group that had actually put the whole thing together.
Right.
So much is perception. They play games with our minds, and the average person has very little idea what's going on. That's why, of course, we carry one wonderful book called The Creature from Jekyll Island, which really tells you the story about the secret meeting where a secret cabal got together and set up the Federal Reserve System that controls our monetary system today and controls the destiny of our people and our nation. Well, Ron, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, you know, we've been talking about that we're heading towards this financial crisis and that how the powers to be are going to do everything they can to keep this thing together and how they keep manipulating events to hold it. But as you can see, things are starting to happen much, much faster than they were 2, 3, 4 years ago. Gold going from $500 to $730 in a matter of 3 or 4 months tells you right off the bat that the bankers are starting to lose their control, their ability to just suppress the markets at will, but it's going to get more and more spastic, and as it gets faster and faster, people are going to be very vulnerable if they don't start taking some steps very quickly to protect themselves. And, you know, part of the reasons for these violent corrections you see in the gold and silver market, if you really think about it, our whole economy, our whole monetary system is a gigantic confidence game. So the powers to be have to make sure the masses don't wake up and jump on board. So if you're timid and you're trying just to break even and you see the silver market drop 30% in a matter of 2 weeks, that's going to scare an awful lot of people out of seeing gold and silver as a refuge, and that's part of the design. So I would just tell people they need to do their own research and realize that the monetary system is failing. Once you understand that the dollar is going down the tube and it's just a matter of time, then you can start figuring out ways to protect yourself from it, and that is to get out of dollar investments, and gold and silver, of course, historically is the way to protect yourself. What I tell people is to try not to think of your gold and silver as a get-rich-quick scheme. Do not leverage to do it. What your main priority when you get into the market is to try to preserve what you spent a lifetime building. So try to think of gold and silver coins in your possession as the best possible vehicle you can find that gives you the best chance of bridging the gap between one failing system, which is this dollar system, to the next system that will replace it. Now, we can speculate what that system will be, and we probably have some good ideas, but no one knows for sure. The only thing I would say for sure is that gold and silver will have value in that new system. So that's what we're trying to do, is preserve our wealth and just get through the financial storm and have something left when we get to the other side.
Well, I think that's a very good advice. And certainly, you may make some money on it, but don't count on it. If you accomplish nothing other than preserving what you have, I mean, that's really what it's all about. The problem is, I am firmly convinced that the vast majority of the American people, not understanding the things we talk about here at Radio Liberty, are going to be totally impoverished by the coming financial tsunami. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And Ron, let's get out your telephone number one more time.
Sure, that's 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561. And anyone who calls, if you want to chat about the things we discussed here and want to discuss in detail, feel free to call. Plus, I have a package of information I can send out to you so to help you get started and understand what's going on in the world.
God bless. Thanks so much, Ron. Talk to you again next month.
Always a pleasure.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Ron Brown. And then let me simply point out that we have put together a syllabus and a talk. It's called The Financial Tsunami. You can get the talk on DVD or on VHS. And the syllabus, of course, gives you all of the government figures and the background of what's going on and the script of the talk and of course, explains the derivative market and the carry market and the hedge funds and really so much information you need to know. This has a copy of the Earth Charter there. The Earth Charter is the Mein Kampf of the occult people who rule the world. It was written by Mikhail Gorbachev, who's involved with the occult, Marie Strong, who's involved with the occult, and Stephen Rockefeller, the son of Nelson Rockefeller, who's involved with the occult, and what people have really missed for a long period of time is the relationship between the occult and the Rockefeller family. And when you begin to understand that, you can understand why they're working so hard to bring about a new world order and a new world religion, or why David Rockefeller's Trilateral Commission's logo is a circle made up of three sixes joined together in the middle by an upside-down broken cross. And if you doubt what I'm saying, why go to their website, trilateral.org. Trilateral.org, and you can certainly go from the various sites there, and you'll actually see their logo, a circle with three sixes in the center, an upside-down broken cross. Understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield. We hope that many of you will, of course, want to get our four tapes set on the financial Armageddon, which we think gives you a lot of insight. That's four of the four major guests we have here at Radio Liberty talking about what they see going on at the present time. And then if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you really need to get that, because it will take you into an understanding of the true nature of the spiritual battle we're involved in, and it comes with either a DVD and or a VHS rendition of Brotherhood of Darkness. Now, of course, if you want to get the really fancy one put out by the Prophecy Club, it's called The Secrets of the Illuminati. It's much longer. You have to see which one you really like the most. I think they're both good. They both tell essentially the same story, that there really are secret societies out there that are founded in the occult. And, of course, there really is another dimension, and there are people who have tapped into the other dimension, and they've been well rewarded with unbelievable wealth and unbelievable power, but, of course, at the expense of their eternal souls. So remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. You can listen to our programs on the Internet 5 hours a day at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization.